Welcome to Broken Law, brought to you by the American Constitution Society, a 501c3 nonprofit nonpartisan organization. I'm Beth Finchuk, Director of Policy and Program for Economic Justice here at ACS. The Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, represents performers engaged in all sorts of media and entertainment, including actors, announcers, broadcast journalists, dancers and DJs, newswriters and news editors, program hosts, puppeteers, recording artists and singers, stunt performers, voiceover artists, and more. In 2023, SAG-AFTRA members participated in a high-profile strike against the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. And one of the major issues at stake was how artificial intelligence could affect the industry. Here to help us understand how AI is impacting the work of performers is Sarah Fowler. Sarah serves as Senior Deputy General Counsel at SAG-AFTRA and was the lead attorney handling the nearly four-month strike in 2023. Sarah, I'm thrilled to have you. Welcome to Broken Law.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. And can I just say before we start that I'm not here as an authorized representative of SAG-AFTRA. All of the opinions and thoughts are my own today.
Absolutely. Sarah, I guess I'd like to take us back to 2023. Artificial intelligence appeared to be a major area focused in last year's strike and the contract negotiations. What concerns did SAG-AFTRA have relating to AI?
SAG-AFTRA, like I think the entire workforce at that point and continuing to today, had concerns about job replacement through artificial intelligence. But for film and television actors, it's an even bigger concern because you're not just replaced by a robot or some sort of new technology. You are replaced by you, which is science fiction level crazy and wild, but it is here. It is science act now. And so we really felt heading into these negotiations that it was crucial we establish a framework in collective bargaining that would ensure performers have some control over the exploitation of their digital selves, which now can be very convincingly created through the use of artificial intelligence, and that they're properly compensated for that use, and that they are provided with information so that they can give informed consent when allowing the use of their digital replica.
Leading up to the strike, did the law provide any protection for a person's likeness, like their visual image or the sound of their voice?
Yes. These are known as right of publicity laws, and it's something SAG-AFTRA in particular has been at the forefront of ensuring we expand these laws to other states. They're all state laws, and just strengthening them over time. Right of publicity laws are in, I think, 28 states right now, and there are an additional 7 that have a common law tradition of enforcing right of publicity. So that's about 35 states with an enforcement right. And what these laws do is they focus on providing a right to control and consent to the commercial use of your voice, name, image, and likeness. I think it's important to give an example here. So maybe think about an internet ad where it has a picture of Sandra Bullock and the tagline is, Sandra Bullock wants you to buy these blue jeans. To buy them, click here and you'll look as great as she does. Well, if Sandra Bullock didn't authorize the use of her name and her image to sell that product, she'd likely have a right of publicity claim against that jeans company. So that's traditionally where we've seen these protections for name and image use up to today, where we're trying to expand that, but we'll talk about that later.
Sure. So you mentioned that these are state laws right now. Is there any federal right that protects that right to publicity that you're talking about?
No, not expressly. I mean, there are sometimes people might have a copyright interest or a trademark interest in their name or their brand. And I know that sometimes people assert that in addition to state right of publicity laws, but there is not currently a federal right of publicity that's established.
What role does federal copyright law play in this dynamic of rapid technological development?
So really, right now, there are a lot of cases pending in the court about to what extent an AI-generated content is copyright protected. And until we have, clarity on that in the courts, we're not going to see major studios and major record labels really investing a lot of time and effort into fully AI-generated content because they want to make sure they have control over the output of what they create. And if they don't have a copyright and output, then they don't have control over it and they can't exclusively commercialize it. So I think until we get that fully settled, we're not exactly sure how copyright is going to play into all of this, but it certainly will. We just don't know to what extent and where. But, you know, in addition to that, I do think copyright is a helpful framework for us to think about in establishing a federal answer to the issue we're facing in AI, where this can be proliferated online very quickly. Copyright has a framework where it does allow for what are called takedown notices. If there's an online platform that is using or displaying a copyright without permission, that's the kind of thing that I think we're going to need to see for this right of publicity, this right to control your image, your voice, your face, now that the tech has gotten to the point where your voice and image and face can be used without you having anything to do with it. So we're going to need something like that. So I think copyright is a good guidepost.
Okay. And as I understand it, works that have no human component cannot be copyrighted. So if it's something that's purely artificial intelligence created, that would not have copyright protections available. Is that right?
Well, I think that's currently the assumption. You know, I think also right now the question is to what extent there are copyrights in the content that is training the AI, right? And to what extent that is a permissible use. So yeah, but absolutely. That's why I don't think anybody who monetizes content is going to be doing anything that's fully AI generated right now, because they wouldn't be able to exclusively monetize that content.
Okay. But then you have the issue too, as you mentioned, about those inputs that artificial intelligence is using to create.
Yes.
Whatever it is creating.
Yes.
Is that a permissible use under copyright? And then if that output has some element of kind of human creativity, when does it become copyrightable
itself?
Exactly.
When are we going to cross that threshold into human involvement? And also the inverse of that, when have we not yet crossed that threshold? And so that we're going to see the major companies being risk averse to that circumstance until that's clarified in the courts. But I just saw the other day, this company did this fully AI generated full length feature film of a parody of Terminator 2. And I didn't see the whole thing. I watched the trailer and it's wild what can be done already and what some people are doing, because they don't need to have exclusive control. They're playing with this tool and they're seeing what it can do. But that in and of itself is just, it's telling us where things might go.
What challenges did SAG-AFTRA face when bargaining over the use of artificial intelligence?
Oh, there were many challenges. First, the challenge was anytime that there's this new technology, right, that disrupts an industry and there's collective bargaining over it, you've got the employer who wants to keep themselves as flexible as possible with the new technology so that they can respond to market forces nimbly. So they don't want a lot of boundaries on what they can do with that new tech. And on the flip side, the employee wants to ensure they have as much control over the use of that new tech as they possibly can get and set up as many boundaries as they can get so that they aren't left behind or replaced as this new technology shifts the business. And so that was really the core of the challenge here. We're coming at this. We all knew that AI was out of the bag. It is here. But we came at it from very different places on how we should move forward with that understanding. On top of that, as we talked to our membership, we really developed these two North Stars of what we felt we had to achieve when it came to AI. And that was informed consent and fair compensation. So we knew we had to achieve that. And then layer on top of that, this tech is like there are all these different ways that the studio might digitally replicate someone. And so we had to account for that.
So I want to start getting into the agreement that was reached a little bit. How did that agreement really address performance concerns about artificial intelligence and the idea that, maybe they could be replicated or replaced by an artificially created performer?
Yeah. So first, we set out to achieve fair compensation and informed consent, and we did achieve that, in my opinion, in these terms. And that was really important because those are going to be crucial no matter where the tech goes. I think second, we were able to strike that balance between not incentivizing performer replacement, but also not inhibiting the use of this new tool. And I don't know how much you want me to get into the details of what we agreed to, but we broke it down into a few categories, right? So we have the employment-based digital replica category and digital alteration. I would say that's sort of similar to that category. We have an independently created digital replica category, and then we have a generative AI category. And we did address it differently in each of those scenarios. That's what I was talking about earlier, where there's all these different ways that you can digitally alter someone. And we have to take that into account as we determine what's appropriate in terms of consent and compensation. And so we did that by breaking it into these three categories of ways to replicate, I guess.
Yeah, let's get into that. So maybe start off with what a digital replica is, and then we'll break it apart into the independently created digital replicas and the employment ones.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, a digital replica, I think we probably have it as a defined term in the agreement, and I don't have it in front of me. So this is not what I'm saying is more just
a summary.
Yes, a summary. So a digital replica is what you might imagine. It is using this AI technology or any technology really that can create the replica of someone else. Sometimes it's made through a scan of the person or their voice. Sometimes it's made through old footage of the person and feeding that into, or old voice recordings of the person and feeding that into an AI model that can then create something that can direct it what to say and how to move. And sometimes that's more the independently created. The scan is the employment-based created. And then there's the generative AI created. That's not necessarily going to be a replica. That's going to be a fully synthetic voice or performance that isn't actually tied or referenced to a particular individual.
Okay. So when we're talking about digital replicas, it's essentially something that artificial intelligence has created that tries to mimic a specific person, mimic their voice, mimic how they appear. And then synthetic performers are, again, artificial intelligence creates them. And it's supposed to look like a person, but not any particular person. It's just
exactly.
Gives the impression that there's some performer who's acting or singing, whatever
yes.
It might be.
Exactly.
Okay.
Great summary.
And then tell me more about this informed consent, because I know one of the concerns that's come up just in general is the idea that if there's a digital replica out there, it could be made to do basically anything. And so how do you get at that informed consent where someone has got some real idea about what's going to be done with the digital replica?
Yeah. So a lot of it is timing. And so on timing, we require that the consent be sought when you have an idea of the intended use, right? So you can't just say, hey, performer, we want to engage you on this TV show, and we might use a digital replica of you at some point for all time. You can't do that. Instead, you have to say, hey, we're engaging you for this television show. We want you to initial and give us consent to scan you for the potential of using your digital replica in the television show. And if you give that consent, then we're going to need to come back to you and say, okay, now we've looked at the shot. We really think we need to add a line here where, you know, and you would say X, Y, Z after you already said A, B, C, and we want your consent to add that line, or we need your consent, stunt performer. We realized later that we really need to do this stunt that is looks like you're deep in the ocean doing cartwheels and being attacked by a shark. That's not something that we can safely do with an individual. We want your consent to use your scan, but to create the stunt in a digitally replicated way. That's what we say needs to be consented to.
Got it. So the focus there really seems to be on being able to have a concrete ask, something that's specific. It's got kind of a boundaries on it that someone can understand. So if they agree, it's not, they're not going to have their digital replica popping up in unforeseen circumstances.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's really important to artists because, I mean, this is their craft, right? They are the ones making these creative decisions about how this character is portrayed. And if the studio wants it to look like you made a choice that you would never make, you need to have the ability to not consent to it or negotiate additional compensation for it. That's what's important.
Yeah. Whether it's acting or singing or anything. I mean, it's art, it's expression. And so that makes perfect sense to me that you'd want to maintain control over that. And then you had also mentioned compensation being an issue. I can certainly understand if a digital replica is going to be used or a synthetic performer that there are issues about, well, is that doing the job of an actress or a singer, a live person who could be doing it? How did the agreement address that?
So that's really where that balance is tricky because you really can't make it so that it's so much cheaper for them to not use a human because we really believe in human artistry, right? And so it's important. But we also understand that our studio partners, and they are our partners, they're our bargaining partners, need to be able to have access to efficiencies where it makes sense. So for an employment-based digital replica, you have to be paid your pro rata daily rate or the minimum rate, whichever is higher. So if you're a day performer, the day rate is probably the minimum and it's probably the same. But if you have a weekly rate that's over scale, your pro rata daily rate is going to be higher than the minimum, right? And so you are entitled to compensation for that pro rata daily rate for the number of days it would have taken a human performer to do the scene that is instead being done by a replica. So that's where you don't have to go back. You don't have to do it. The studio gets that efficiency. They don't have to open up the whole set necessarily. They don't have to deal with your schedule as you're filming something else overseas and can't make it back for several weeks, pushing back the whole timing. That's an urgency that we can see some value in our studio partners having, but they're not getting incentivized to just never include a human in the performance, right? Because they still have to pay you because it is you. And it may not have been you doing that work, but it is you that they value. And it is you as a performer that they value. And that has value and value should be paid, right? So that's really how we struck the balance on the employment-based one. On independently created, you have to get consent. And so that consent negotiation will require bargaining. We didn't set a minimum for what that compensation should be, but we also made sure you cannot use an independently created digital replica without that consent. So there's going to be discussions, and that will depend, as always in Hollywood, on your leverage, your representatives, and things like that. And then for generative AI, that was the trickiest one, right? Because that's not our members, right? It's not even trying to replicate our members, but it is replacing their job. So that's in some ways the scariest, but we had to compromise there because the tech really isn't there where that is going to happen to a great extent yet, where we're going to have these fully synthetic performers as stars in a movie. I'm not sure that's something that is really going to be a huge issue during the term of this contract, but we needed to get something in there. So they have to give notice to the union when they're going to use a synthetic performer in place of a human performer. And we have the opportunity to bargain with them. If we think it's something that should be compensated in some way, we have the opportunity to bargain with them at that time.
So I saw it looks like the contract also included some exceptions for uses that would be protected by the First Amendment. Could you explain why that language is included in there?
Yeah, so that's always something. Whenever we're updating right of publicity laws or trying to get a new right of publicity law on the books or trying to do a federal right of publicity law or bargaining, studios are always really concerned, rightly so, about the First Amendment. And that's something they take very seriously, their right to make expressive works in the way that they want to make them without too many burdens on their ability to do that. So the language, and I want to read it because I think it kind of illuminates why studios would want this, but it says, no consent is required when the use is of the type protected by the First Amendment, including for purposes of comment, criticism, scholarship, satire, or parody, or use in a docudrama or historical or biographical work. And I think it's those last three that really illuminate why studios wanted this. They want to make the movie about Elvis. They want to make the movie about Michael Jackson. They want to make these movies about these historical individuals. They want to make these biopics. And sometimes they might want to use this new technology to do that. And so they don't want to have to fight with us over whether that's First Amendment protected. And we understand that that's always going to be their position. And we were willing to negotiate that for those specific uses, there's no need for consent and agree that it is protected by the First Amendment.
You're listening to Broken Law, brought to you by the American Constitution Society. If you're enjoying Broken Law, consider becoming a member of ACS today. You do not need to be a lawyer to be a member. As we discuss so often on this podcast, our laws and legal systems impact all of us. By supporting ACS, you support Broken Law, our work to diversify the federal bench, and our advocacy for Supreme Court reform. You also become a member of our nationwide network. Learn more about ACS by visiting our website at acslaw.org. And now, back to the conversation.
So the terms that we've been discussing, covering the creation and use of digital replicas and alterations that might happen, do those apply to all of SAG-AFTRA's members, you know, including well-known celebrities, background actors? How does that work?
Yeah, it applies to anyone working under our television and film contract. So yes, everybody, anyone who's hired on a SAG-AFTRA production, they get the privilege of working with these protections. And that's why right now union membership, union covered work is so important because you don't want to do non-union work and not have these rights and then be contributing to the replacement of you by you by working in a non-union environment. So we really think union membership now is more important than in some ways it's ever been.
Does artificial intelligence pose different risks for the biggest stars out there and relatively unknown performers, or are those risks fairly similar regardless of celebrity?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're the same, but to different degrees, right? I think that you've got your unknown performers, probably, this is a generalization, but probably more concerned about job replacement and that side of AI. And then you've got the higher profile celebrity stars, likely less concerned about job replacement and more concerned about unauthorized misuse of their replica. Everybody is concerned about both, and rightly so. So everyone is vigilant on both. But I would say you're right to ask that. I do think that there are sort of different degrees of what you're most concerned about, depending on where you are in your career at this point.
So do you think that the terms that SAG-AFTRA gained will open the door to further bargaining with AMPTP about artificial intelligence in the future? I can't imagine this is the last discussion you'll be having about this.
No, it's not. It's not. And I mean, it's not just AMPTP. I think every single negotiation on all of our contracts, which are many, the number one issue for the foreseeable future will be AI, but definitely also with the AMPTP on this television and film contract. We just wrapped up negotiations on our television animation contract, and that was a huge issue. But what is so great about the provisions that we did agree to is they're a framework. They can be built upon in this contract and in others. We're no longer, like we were going into this negotiation, starting from nothing. We've now got the framework, and we can go into every negotiation with that framework that was negotiated, that was agreed to by an employer, many employers, on a very high profile basis. And we've set the floor now. And now what we're doing is just improving as we get more and more knowledge and understanding of the tech, of the uses, of the trends, depending on the different industry where we are.
Yeah. And SAG-AFTRA represents so many different types of performers. Could you give us some examples of other spaces where artificial intelligence is coming up and being negotiated?
Yeah. I mean, again, everywhere, right? But examples are video games. It's a really big thing and contentious issue in that area. Our sound recording contract, so with the record labels, another really big area that we're negotiating on. But think about it also for like broadcasters and DJs. That's another area where it's really, really important, arguably more. I mean, if they're the ones telling us the news, and if you take their brand is truth, and most their brand is truth and honesty and right and reporting the facts. And if you take that and misuse that replica and they are not reporting something that's been verified and checked and that they feel is correct, I mean, how devastating is that, right? Not just to them, but to society as a whole. So it's really, it comes up in all of our areas and really will be the number one negotiating point for everything for probably the rest of my career, I think.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, I know. I know. And none of us knew that. None of us really, we did know, I think, at SAG-AFTRA earlier than most, that this was going to be a huge issue for our membership and something we've been working on and looking into even before AI was here. Digital replication in particular,
sure,
is something we've been concerned about for a long time. But none of us, I think, fully understood how much it would take over everything that we do and be at the core of our services to our members.
It seems like with any big new technology that comes out, different aspects of the workforce have to figure out, how is this going to affect my industry? And so we've seen shifts like this happen before.
Yeah.
But I completely agree. This was one of those where I think people knew about artificial intelligence, but maybe didn't know how quickly it would become so good.
Right.
And so right. we're all yeah, trying to move quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And we are not, and we are mere humans.
Right.
But I think, though, I don't know if this is the correct use of irony, but I do think AI will actually also help us protect against AI. I think that it, while it has the tools to create so quickly and so authentically these different things, I think it also will provide us with the tools to protect and police misuse of the tool. And so I'm hopeful that it can give as much as it takes. and I think that it can. I mean, I really do. So,
right. Yeah. No, I mean, there are lots of good uses for AI. It's just about how making
right,
sure that those are the uses that get implemented and we protect against the risks.
That's right. That's right. And I will say, I think everyone's talking about it in that framework, right? How do we, and I think that is new. That didn't happen when social media came on the scene, for instance, right? There wasn't this full, like, worldwide understanding that this technology was going to change our lives fundamentally when social media came on the scene. Like there is with AI. We all get it. We're seeing it happen. Everyone at every level is talking about it and they're looking for solutions and they're trying to think about this on the front end rather than the back end. So I think that's a good sign for AI.
So shifting away from the bargaining table, are there other areas where people are looking at how artificial intelligence could affect workers and trying to put some protections in place?
Yeah. One thing that I teach a class on labor law in the entertainment industry. And one thing that I talk to my students about is how so much of the work happens away from the bargaining table, right? And a lot of the work in AI is happening away from the bargaining table equally to what's happening at the bargaining table. And in particular, we're looking at trying to get this federal legislation on the books that would establish a federal right of publicity that would more broadly apply, that would have a similar type of framework like we have in copyright that would allow for takedowns of unauthorized uses of digital replicas, that wouldn't limit enforcement to only commercial uses, because we need to expand that a little bit. That's not the only danger when you have deep fakes that can bully and sexually harass people, when you have broadcasters, right, who could be portrayed saying things that are untrue and harmful, and including in expressive works for our members, right, when you have them being misused in these expressive works. So I think that's one place where we're really focusing a lot of energy. In addition to that, we're just trying to make sure these conversations keep happening. So we're part of coalitions on ethical AI. We're joining roundtables. Our members are testifying in Congress. We're strengthening these right of publicity laws at the state levels and really just trying to attack this on all sides. And I shouldn't say attack. I mean, I think what we're trying to do is balance on all sides, I guess, or protect on all sides, because we're not attacking AI, but we are trying to ensure that it is ethically used and does not, create these incentives that would replace our members in their craft.
So you mentioned some legislation. Can you talk a little bit about that legislation and, you know, how exactly it tries to protect people from some of the risks that AI might carry?
Yeah. So I'll take a step back a little bit about why we think we need this federal right of publicity. I think that individuals have taken for granted the fact that we have control over what our voice says and what our face does and what our image does. And that's a right we know we have, but it's also not a right that was easily or authentically taken away. So it wasn't something we felt needed to be maybe enshrined in law, except for these circumstances where someone might be used without their permission, their picture might be used without their permission to sell something, right? These state right of publicity laws. But now that the tech is there, where you can very authentically be doing and saying something that you did not do or say, we now need to enshrine that in the law. And that needs to be a floor for everyone. That is a concern to me just as much as it is to a celebrity or a politician, right? I do not want my image online saying and doing things that I did not do without my consent and control. So that's why we think it's really important to have this federal right enshrined. And then in addition to that, we need to make sure there's effective enforcement. It can't just be that you have the ability to hire a lawyer and sue the company that made the digital replica of you or the individual that made this unauthorized digital replica. We also need the ability to get it taken down. I mean, you saw that Taylor Swift deepfake and how it just went everywhere so fast. That's so scary. And we need the ability to tell these platforms that didn't make the replica, but they're knowingly letting it spread on their platforms, knowing it's not Taylor Swift. It's a deep fake of Taylor Swift. And maybe they didn't know on this particular circumstance, but going forward, we're going to know. And we need the ability to make them take it down so that we do less harm. And this technology is used for good and not for misdirection or misleading purposes or just mean purposes, right? I mean, you think about kids, right, today and how online bullying is so scary and harmful. Imagine if the tech gets to the point where you can do that, where young people can do that to each other, and then it gets on social media and it's spread around. You need to be able to take that down. So that's really what I think this legislation is trying to do, and why legislators at the federal level, and in this day and age, this is really important. It's a bipartisan effort, right? It's not just Democrats or just Republicans. Both sides of the aisle see this as really, really crucial and important. And I think that's why. I think we really all at a cellular level understand that we should control ourselves and how we are portrayed.
Yeah. And one of the things that you brought up was that the law would protect not just celebrities or commercial uses, but it applies more broadly to everyone, I think, if it were passed.
Yes.
And I think we've seen some reports about people who do not have celebrity status, who have had really negative experiences with replicas of them, AI generated, doing things they didn't do or saying things they didn't say. So it does seem like technology is creating a risk in this space for everyone to some capacity.
Absolutely. And we're all online now. I mean, you and I are online right now, right? Our images.
Our voices are out there.
our voices are out there. And that can be misused. And as this technology gets better and better, there are going to need to be fewer inputs to create something that looks and sounds like an individual. And there are going to be plenty of those just because we live our lives so freely online at this point. So we really have to take that into account when we consider how are we going to police this new technology to make sure it's not harming us as individuals and as a society.
Yeah. And one of the things that you've said throughout the conversation is we're trying to find a balance. How do we get the good out of artificial intelligence without running into all of these risks and having them come into fruition? One of the things that I've heard voiced is a concern that if you made a federal intellectual property right in your likeness, are platforms going to start taking down content that isn't artificially generated? Are they going to remove too much, essentially? And I'm curious what your response is to that. It seems to be like, how are they going to know what should be taken down and what shouldn't? Because I don't think anyone's saying leave the bad AI up.
No, I think you're right. And that's always the conversation around these kinds of laws, right? Because we are, as Americans, very protective of our First Amendment, and we should be. But the way I look at it, because we've seen these conversations happen a lot, same with state right of publicity laws. I mean, that was the same conversation. And you have to just understand right now we are sort of in the wild west of this technology and trust that it is going to be worked out. As I said before, I think AI is going to probably be the tool that helps us figure out how to identify what is authorized, what is unauthorized, so that we can really figure that out. I also think that social media platforms and online platforms have the resources and the money to figure out how to achieve that balance. And if the law incentivizes them to do that, that they will. And so I think what we have to do first is establish a framework and the principles and where we think the balance should be. And then we let the market and the tech work it out after that. But if we don't have a compass, if we don't have a moral compass with this, then it's not going to go in the right direction. The pendulum will swing the wrong way. So I understand those concerns and think it's very important that we keep that as part of the conversation, but we have to have the guiding light that gets us to the right balance here. And if we aren't putting that in the law, we're not going to incentivize all the rest of the pieces to come together in that pointing in that direction.
When new technologies emerge, it can be challenging to figure out what's needed to ensure their benefits can be shared and their harms avoided. How are you feeling about where we're at with AI right now?
Sometimes it depends on the day.
That's fair.
But right now, I'm feeling pretty optimistic. I mean, and just think about when the WGA sat down to start negotiations with the AMPTP last summer. It was maybe just a little bit less than a year ago. And think about where we've come since then in terms of a society understanding the technology, understanding the threat, and looking at it as something we need to talk about and solve. Just as AI has moved so rapidly, so have we in terms of publicizing this, not we, SAG-AFTRA, we as a community of people. We've all, as a country, educated ourselves on this, and we're talking about it. We're doing podcasts on it. We're writing about it. We're testifying about it. It is the thing. I mean, there's an article in the New York Times about AI, like every single day from a different angle. And there wasn't this time last year. There wasn't. It just didn't have that same level of understanding and publicity around it that it does now. So I'm feeling optimistic that just as it's trending, we are too. We're always going to be maybe a little bit behind, but we are running fast and faster than maybe I even thought we would as a society and trying to catch up. So I'm optimistic today.
I have to say, I agree. I am hopeful just based on the fact that people are talking about artificial intelligence in all spaces.
Yes.
And just seeing, as you said, how quickly those conversations have grown, how diverse perspectives are being shared. It's that gives me hope on how we'll be able to really use the technology for all of its good purposes, some that I'm sure we don't even know about yet, and really put the right guardrails on.
Me too.
So for those listeners that are interested in learning more about AI and how it could affect performers and other workers, where can they learn more?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's an article on AI in every major publication everywhere. But I'll point you to a couple of things that I like to follow just from my seat in the entertainment industry. One, the Human Artistry Campaign is this coalition of groups who are really coming together to ensure that humans continue to be a part of the arts and continue to lead the arts because they're the heart of them, right? And so I would recommend going to that. It's at humanartistrycampaign.com. Also, while it won't be as good as this podcast, SAG-AFTRA has its own podcasts, and we've had a few that focus on AI that I think are really interesting, and I bet we'll have several more as time goes on where we invite people on to talk about their perspectives and talk about where we are in our thinking with AI. And so I recommend going to the SAG-AFTRA website and searching podcasts and looking for some of those. I think they're really informative. And also, I would say all of the entertainment publications right now really are often focusing on it. And so I like to look at what The Hollywood Reporter, Variety, Puck, what they're all saying about AI. They're talking about it every day. So those are the spaces that I go to make sure I'm staying informed from, you know, my seat and my perspective on AI and how it affects my membership.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation. It was really a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks to our listeners for finding Broken Law. You can find our podcast episodes wherever you're listening to this one. If you're enjoying Broken Law, help us bring the show to more listeners by recommending it to a friend and leaving us a review. Together, we'll speak truth to power about the law, whose interests it really serves, and whose it does not.